I once knew these two guys. Each, in their own way, had had it all. And blew it. Left with broken brains and battered bravery, having to find parts of themselves they had seen in film and cinema. But who were they anymore? If they were going to do this, it needed to be the most thorough search for identity ever undertaken. Welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast with your hosts, Ben Groves and Rob McFarlane. This episode contains spoilers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show where two best friends with awful mental health analyze the best and the worst of cinema as a distraction from examining themselves too hard. Part movie analysis, part self-analysis, all fun nonsense, but...
All the fun!
You know, as a sort of homage to the fact that this is a thinly veiled mental health check-in, I feel like it's kind of incumbent on us, Ben, before we get to what we're doing, how are we doing, and how was this film relevant to your week?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I've had a long week. I've been watching some fucking belters of movies this week as well.
Nice.
I'm not going to lie, mate. I've been fucking dreading this series. I've been dreading this film.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Okay.
Put it off until the last minute twice.
Lovely.
Instantly regretted it.
Well.
I should have watched this way in advance because shockingly, mate, it is a really fucking... complex, insane, weird as fuck movie that is right up my alley.
I've had this series on the cook now. I've thought about it. You know me. You know how long I've been begging you to do a Chaplin series.
Yes, we've been doing this for just over 2 years, and you've been asking to do this for about 2 years.
Yeah,
18 months, 2 years. Some shit
I remember
like
when I first joined, I was like, look, we could go right back to the start of cinema, and we could really like dig into how it was whilst doing blockbusters. On the other hand, and you were like,
Yeah, sure. So, did you say Santa with muscles? Should we? Is that far back enough?
Yeah. But I felt like, do you know what? It's a new leaf for me on the podcast this week.
Was your week, man? I haven't asked you how you're doing. That's
well,
fucking
do you know what?
It's
brilliant.
How are
there was
you?
A whole bunch of stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff that for the last, I'd say, couple of months, really, I've not been able to talk about because it's not just my stuff. And talking about how it affects me would affect other people. And
it's
all resolved. It's all on the mend. I can now officially say, close that chapter. It's time for a fresh leaf. And I think, well, do you know what I'm going to do to celebrate? I'm going to fucking push the Charlie Chaplin series. So we are going to contextualize modern film by going to a major source.
Yeah.
Arguably the first film star.
Yeah.
There were others before, but none of this scale. This was international, right?
Yeah, no, I'll agree.
And we're going to do a cheeky little three-parter, early career, mid-career, late career of Charlie Chaplin, starting this week with The Kid.
The Kid!
1921. Black and white, silent.
Fucking slapstick shit.
Oh, it's not slapstick. It has some slapstick in it, but it is not slapstick.
We've had a fight about this already, Ben.
Let's chill out, we've argued about this.
Yeah. All right, and you won, and that's fine.
Right.
Let's just move on.
Do you want to know some fun facts about The Kid?
Give me some facts about The Kid.
Right. So I wanted to cover this because silent filmmakers, they pioneered the art form that we cover, right? Virtually every style and genre of filmmaking that we've done so far, and lots that we haven't, were born in this era. Right. And from a technical point of view, they literally did everything that we now know cinema to be. Mm-hmm. Some fucker figured it out in this decade.
Yeah.
Right.
It's fucking incredible.
Now, here's some little facts for you. This was released in 1921. It was made for $250,000.
Fucking hell. That's got to be like a massive chunk of change back then.
That was $5
million. Okay.
That's the equivalent of...
In 1920!
It was 250K in 1920, but it cost the equivalent of $5 million. It made $5 million in 1921 money.
Jesus Christ! What's that in today's money?
$80 million.
Ooh! Ooh.
That's, yeah.
Get me goosebumps, that did, right. Man.
And I used to watch these when I was growing up, right? So we had them on VHS, taped off the TV.
Right.
So it was an old fifth or sixth generation copy of the film reel that was given to the TV station, who broadcast it over the terrestrial network's analog, right?
Fucking
where it was displayed,
hell.
It was then recorded onto a VHS, which was then copied again. And I was watching it in probably the furthest away from what you could describe as definition ever.
Yeah, you were essentially watching it through like Vaseline vision, right? It was just fucking, it was just gray blobs slapping each other with fucking, I don't know, 2x4s. I don't know what happened in these films. I'm
You've
sticking
seen...
to my guns, man.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that. For the benefit of the people who may not have seen this film, it's available.
This film,
The Kid.
The 105-year-old black and white silent movie. The Kid. You just want it, just in case no one has seen this film.
Fuck you, right? There are people.
Most of the people I know
go,
I don't watch 1970s movies because they're too old.
I know.
And you're expecting.
I know.
All right.
I know what I've done here, okay? I've also spoken already to a listener who says Charlie Chaplin is his favorite director.
Who?
Joao, I'm really bad with pronunciation, so J-O-A-O, but the A's got a little wiggle over it. Joao Ribeiro. I'm really sorry, buddy, but we had a great chat about how much he loves Chaplin.
We'll just call him JR. We'll call him Junior.
JR. I like JR. Yeah. So JR and I, we're having a right chat up about how much Chaplin...
Is JR 115 years old?
No.
Did he see this when he was 10?
No.
That is shocking.
Look, Ben, just because there are people that are different to you that exist in the world.
No, it's not different to me. That's just this the first ever human person I've ever heard say, Charlie Chaplin is my favorite director of all time.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
You might end this series by being one of them. You never know.
But the way that this fucking podcast goes, it's definitely going to go that way. Let's not kid ourselves. We know what we're getting in for.
But
let's
I get just, your point. Just, I get your point. We'll Lots of people it, may not right? have seen this. It is available in full HD on YouTube. Just search The Kid, Charlie Chaplin.
Mm-hmm.
It's an hour long.
It's gorgeous.
And if you don't want to, if it is gorgeous, and if you don't want to do that, we're going to break it down. I'm not going to warn you about spoilers. It's on YouTube. You could be watching it right now. Also, again, over 100 fucking years old. So
105 years old. It's fucking, it's not spoilers. It's not foreshadowing. It's none of that bullshit. It's just old as fuck. This isn't spoilers. Go watch it. I've written the breakdown this week.
I'm terrified.
I wanted to dig into it. You've not read it so far. So let me just pop this in here.
Oh God, that's for an hour long film, Ben. This is a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
This film's mental, so this is a skim of what happens, right?
Who starts?
I would like you to start, please, because I want to do the sentence at the end.
A mother leaves a charity hospital with a newborn baby in her arms. After a little internal debate in the park, she decides to abandon the baby in the back of a stranger's car with a note that read, "Please love and care for this baby." The car is then moments later stolen by a couple of criminals who discover the abandoned baby after a brief joyride and take the baby down a quiet alley to dump it in a bin.
Yeah. Enter the tramp, played by Charlie Chaplin, who discovers the baby, picks it up, decides against doing anything at all about the situation, and goes to put the baby back in the bin. But uh-oh, the local copper sees this, and out of fear, the tramp is forced to take the baby with him, rather than, you know, just reporting the found infant to the law enforcement official, who could have easily done something about it, negating this entire thing to ever happen. Are you with us so far? Good, because this is minute 6 of the film.
The tramp takes the child back to his squat and discovers it to be a boy. Fast forward 5 years. The baby is now a toddler, and the tramp has raised this child to help him scam housewives out of their money, sending the kid to break windows so the tramp can then very luckily just be walking by with all the necessary equipment to fix the problem for a small fee. The tramp and the kid are relatively successful in this hustle until the tramp tries to bang the local copper's wife and gets chased back to the squat.
After a few more moments of burnt pancake, child labor, poncho blankets, and baby bum fights, the kid suddenly and inexplicably, immediately falls ill. After the doctor arrives to examine the kid, the doctor discovers that the tramp is not the father of this child, and he is reported to what can only be described as the human dog catchers. I've also put in brackets for options in this.
Right.
Orphan Wranglers or the No Daddy Death Squad.
I think I like the third one. No Daddy Death Squad.
Yeah, I knew you would. That was there just for you.
NDDS.
That was there just for you. Yeah, right? See? Yeah, I knew in your mind they've got an armband already. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, see?
Yeah, they do. They do sad adverts in the middle of films.
Yeah, which is
£2 a month. You can support the fine beatings at the NDDS. Yeah. This man tried to raise a child with only the goodness of his own heart and no actual...
But instead, he accidentally raised a child criminal who burns pancakes.
So we need money to beat him.
So the human dog catchers show zero compassion towards this potentially kidnapped toddler.
And now in 1920s answer to Taken, the tramp shows off his very particular set of skills, which turn out to be in no particular order... Parkour, resisting arrest, assaulting a police officer, threatening a government official, and a sprinkle of GBH. Just a grievous bodily harm for Americans, not the hallucinogenic, to name a few. After breaking a large amount of laws to rescue the kid, they both go on the run together.
The biological mother, who has since gone on to become a very wealthy, enormous star... and who, for some reason, hangs around the tramp's doorstep giving poor people apples,
yeah,
is handed a note by the doctor. The very same note that she left with her baby! A bounty is put out on the kid. Around an unforgiving hostel manager sees the bounty for the missing kid in the paper and kidnaps the potentially kidnapped kid.
It's gone Christopher Nolan all of a sudden, isn't it?
Oh my,
can you
this
kidnap
is...
the kidnapped?
Yeah, this is Tenet. He did a pincer movement on a kidnapped kid by kidnapping the kidnapped kid.
The kid, now in custody, is reunited with his mother. Meanwhile, the tramp is having a mad dream about angels being corrupted by demons and trying to see dem ankles, which she does. Yeah. The copper rudely awakens the tramp from this insane slumber fever dream to cart him off to what we all assume is jail. But nah, buddy. Copper drops him off at the mother's mansion and everyone lives happily ever after.
So to sum this up, tramp finds child. Yeah. Rather than report this to authorities, tramp raises bin baby to be a tiny criminal and personal pancake maker for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
After getting ill, the kid is found to be not the tramp's. The human dog catchers and police are battered by the tramp who manages to re-kidnap
them.
He just kicks the shit out of them and everything's fine. Battered by the tramp, who manages to re-kidnap the kidnapped orphan, the kid is then stolen by a hostel manager and returned to his mother. Insane dreamland sequence. Then the tramp is arrested, but also not arrested, and dropped off at the biological mother's mansion to be reunited with the kidnapped kid who he raised for 5 years to be a criminal. Happily ever after. What the fuck did I just watch, Rob?
Very simple when you tell it like that, Ben.
This movie's insane.
When you tell a story like that, it's very, very simple. You know,
this film is mental. Like, it's fucking... This is 80s B... This is like six 80s B movies worth of material in this one 1921 silent slapstick movie.
That's barely over an hour.
That is fucking insane to me.
So look, this series is going to go a certain way, right? This is why I brought Chaplin this way. This whole series, it can serve as a window into like the foundation blocks of American cinema and all that sort of stuff. And we'll do a bit of that.
Yeah.
But it's not about that for me. I want to show you three films by Chaplin, right?
Okay.
And maybe a bonus at the end. But firstly, episode one, do you like him? Second episode, is he still relevant? And third episode, it gets a bit complicated.
Oh, that's going to be
fun. But eventually, at the end of the series, I want to ask you and learn from you genuinely,
yeah,
who is Charlie Chaplin now? Like, what's the point of him? Is there a point to him? Do we put him to bed?
Oh, okay.
You're my litmus test, all right?
I like this. I like this.
At the end of the series, I'm going to find out whether or not I should have brought it or not. Not by how many people listen, not whether or not the reels connect, because I know they're not going to.
Okay.
It's going to be, the people that do listen, you're my sounding board for whether or not I wasted their time.
Okay, that's fair.
So episode one, how did you find Charlie Chaplin?
Right. I've been dreading this series.
You have for 2 years.
between 18 months and 2 years. I'm not sure exactly how long it's been. But I've been dreading it because I've never seen a Charlie Chaplin film in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've always assumed it's cheap shit, mm-hmm. slip on a banana peel, 2x4 to the back of the head when someone's trying to fix a shit doorway type yep. humor, right? And yep. I'm like, that's not my cup of tea. What I didn't expect when I put on Charlie Chaplin's The Kid is to laugh like a twat,
yep.
get caught off guard, be exposed to some of the most mental storytelling I've ever been exposed to in my entire life. Have a little cry, because, you know, I'm emotionally unstable enough to admit that I cry at everything, mm-hmm. Except for real life stuff. I mean, do you know what I mean? Fuck, bottle that shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Squash it right down. Squash it down until it becomes a hernia. Worry about it later.
Films are the safe space where your emotions can go, he's going to let us go. He's going to let us go because it's not real.
Yeah.
The second it's real, it's like, no, he won't let us. He won't let us. No, we're not allowed.
Dude, it's weird, man. I'm like, I'm genuinely healing my fucking past traumas through
mm-hmm.
movies at the minute. It's incredible. It's helping me out loads. Therapist, very happy. And then also not happy because I'm like, I don't need you as much anymore. Okay, I was dreading the series. I genuinely thought it was going to be one of those ones where I'm like, I don't have anything to say. I didn't enjoy the film. Mm-hmm. I don't want to upset you because you love Chaplin.
You don't want it to be an hour of you being like, oh, shit.
I don't want it to be Clerks 3 is essentially what I'm saying, Rob.
I know. I know. I'll forever hang my head in shame in that. I went too far.
I don't think you should. I think you should stand by it because it was raw, it was visceral, it was honest. Go listen to it right now. And then come back to listen to this. I fucking loved this film, Rob.
Oh, I'm so
relieved.
Like,
I loved it.
I'm so relieved. I was so nervous that you were going to hate it.
I'm not sure whether it's because I went into this with such low expectations that I was like genuinely, genuinely surprised where I was like, oh, this isn't a bag of dicks. This is all right. This isn't it. I don't know whether it was that or I also don't know whether it's because I love you very, very much and everything that's important to you is important to me.
Likewise.
So 9 Inch Nails, Tool. Fine. I'll happily spend my money on supporting those guys because they make you happy.
Aw, mate.
This film's gorgeous. It is absolutely fucking gorgeous.
It is.
The black and white, it gave me pure nostalgia of watching movies with my mom on Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. We used to watch like the old, I don't know if you remember, like, but Channel 5 used to show like old 1950s sci-fi stuff on Sunday afternoons.
And when
I was a kid, me and my mom used to sit there. She'd have a coffee. I'd have my decaf coffee. And we'd both sit there watching The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
And just chatting absolute shit. It was so fucking lovely of that. It was just lovely. It gave me that little blanket of like, oh, isn't this a lovely little Sunday afternoon?
I'm going to take that blanket and I'm going to rip it right off. Right?
Right.
Because there's some work to do. And
by the end of
the episode, I think it's going to be a warmer, more important blanket, but it starts rough because I was going in with the assumption that you were going to hate this, so I've brought weapons. All right, I've brought absolute fucking weapons.
All right, shank me with your rhythm stick. Let's
Charlie
go.
Chaplin, is he American or British?
British.
He's British, right?
Okay.
He was born in 1889.
Wow!
Right?
Wow!
To Romani people, gypsies. Okay. Right. There's no birth record. Well, not everyone knows. Not every American knows, right? Not you. There's no birth certificate. There's no record of his birth. He believes he was born in East Street in Walworth, South London.
That's amazing.
His parents had only been married for 4 years. They were both music hall entertainers and they were deadly poor. His younger brother, he didn't see for 30 years because he just got taken from the parents.
What the fuck?
His dad drank himself to death. when Chaplin wasn't very old.
What the fuck?
His mother was psychotic, as in had psychosis.
Jesus Christ.
So they ended up in the workhouse, which was basically the child, like the labor camp.
Right.
Where if you were too poor, there were no social services, there was no benefits. This is pre-everything. It was like, fuck you, live on the street.
Right.
And where somebody went, oh, that's a bit harsh. We should give him a bed and some food. Yeah, but they'll have to work for it. So we're talking like 12-hour days.
Right. Also known as the good old days.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah. If you listen to some politicians, they're like, they love that, right? So yeah, went to Lambeth Workhouse when he was 7.
Right.
Then his mother was in and out of mental hospital. So his performance money in music hall from the age of 9.
Right.
Was to pay his mother's medical bills because a 9-year-old was expected to be supporting his unwell mother.
this is rough, man.
It's a rough upbringing. He's not Christopher Nolan, let's put it that way.
Fuck me,
if you're
man.
Talking like director journeys, he's not like, well, I was at public school and I thought, huh, wouldn't it be funny if I dressed as a tramp? He's like, no, I'm dressing as I would be if I hadn't found fame.
Listen, mate, I'm going to go out on a whim here and say I hated Nolan before we did the Nolan series. And now that we've done the Nolan series, I fucking love that boy. So if you ever take the piss out of him like that again, I swear to God, I'm going to borrow his scarf and fucking slap you with it. All right? That'll just make it better for him. So the next Oscar that he picks up, it'll be covered in the tears of the poor. And that will just make him so much better. You know what I mean? That's a fucking rough start to life, man. That is ridiculously rough. And then I imagine being thrust into 1920s Hollywood with all that, you know, fame and bustling energy and all the high rollers, like new money coming in, old money being spent. I imagine there was no long-lasting side effects or anything like that, right? He just grew up to be completely fine, completely balanced.
You know that Phantom Menace meme with Padme and Anakin?
Yeah. You grew up fine, right?
We'll get
you grew
that.
Up fine,
that's,
right?
That's more of an episode 3 vibe.
okay.
But look, psychological mental health awareness, you know, two mates getting together, being vulnerable with each other and talking about something that they both enjoy. Less common in the 1920s. They didn't even have fucking welfare. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
But this is what I mean. Like, where are the 9-year-olds to pay for our mental health services? You know what I mean?
So the
good old days.
It was the 20s, right? Let's talk about the 20s, the roaring 20s, right?
Sure.
Gatsby, Great Gatsby set in the 20s. You want to think of that opulence, right? So 50% of the US population in 1920 lived in agricultural, non-city-based lifestyle, right? A few decades earlier, that was 90%. So in the lifetime of this movie, everyone had moved to the city. And they were seeing urban poverty for like the first time.
Right. Okay.
They were like, I was living on a farm and then I moved to the city and now I'm eating rats.
Fucking hell, man.
We're 8 years before the Great Depression, right?
Okay.
So everyone is looking up. The future and wealthy living, flapper girls, women were just entering the workforce.
The fuck
like
is
typists.
A flapper girl?
Dancers with the short hair and the nice dresses and they do this Charleston.
Oh, right, okay. In my head. Oh, I'm thinking of Flipper. In my head, I was just sort of like, people used to dress as dolphins?
No. They'd had 3 Republican presidents in a row, which meant taxes on business were super low, taxes on the wealthy were low, and social programs didn't fucking exist.
Fair.
So there's like the 20s, which is Gatsby, which is like, oh, you've got your millions and you've turned them into 7 million.
Cheers to you, good buddy.
And those were the people that were going to the cinema.
Right.
Because it was brand new. It was brand new. So it was a thing you did and you were like, oh, let's go to the cinema. And then Chaplin comes along and goes, so here's a story about a tramp who finds a baby in a bin. How much did your cinema ticket cost?
Dude, the way that this film must have fucking ruined people's days is amazing. It makes me like it that little bit more. Like, again,
but I think what's clever about this, is he doesn't ruin their day. He makes it a joke. So it makes he makes it okay to laugh along with it. And it's only afterwards you're like, I've never seen a tramp.
This is the thing.
I've never even thought about what happened to women who can't look after their babies. That's not part of my life.
But that's what I mean. Like, so these guys who are like, we're so affluent, we can afford the cinema, shall we, darling? And they get into their boxes with their champagnes and their flutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Their little binoculars. Being sort of like, oh, this must be like the opera.
Yeah.
And then Chaplin picks a baby out of a bin, beats up a copper, and then fucking ends up getting arrested three times in one movie. After, there's, what is there, like three fight scenes in this? Four fight scenes?
There's a fair number of fight scenes. It's literally just a tramp fighting people to protect the child he found.
That's what I'm saying. Being affluent and rich and watching this shit, you'd be sort of like, oh my God, is this how they live?
Right.
Oh my days.
Right.
And at the time, it's quite amusing, right? Mm-hmm. But I imagine like a day or two later when they're discussing it, like, or they're sitting in the bath and they're just having a little think and they're like, oh my God.
What does happen?
Oh my God.
Yeah. 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 Because
I think they've shafted us on this one. They've fleeced us.
But you were talking about the human dog catchers, right? The NDDS, No Daddy Death Squad. Like, that was the thing. It's like, well, you're not allowed, you're not capable of looking after this child. And the whole conceit of the kid is that this homeless man who doesn't want the kid to start with, like, he literally finds it, doesn't want the responsibility and tries to put it back where he found it. And the only reason he can't is because he'll get framed for being the abandoner. So he's like, right, okay, well, I guess I just have a kid now. To the point where when someone asks him what gender it is, he nips back in the house. There's a 2 second pause. God.
Comes out and says, John, that's fucking hilarious.
Like, he's never considered it before.
The comedy in this, I didn't expect the comedy in this to be as biting as it was. I thought it was going to be very soft. I thought it was going to be very soft and very delicate for the age of it. And I was caught so fucking off guard. It was unreal.
Right.
I was defenseless against this. I was laughing at the stupidest shit I've ever seen in my entire life because I had no defenses up whatsoever. I went into this assuming that I was better than it. I was like, I'm bigger than this. My funny bones can handle this. I need nothing. Nah, mate. That shit, some of the shit in this caught me mad off guard. There's moments where, like, there's a flying dog. For no reason.
No reason. He just wanted
in an angel outfit. And that shit caught me off guard because the reaction that it gets was my reaction in real life. But I was watching Charlie Chaplin do the exact same thing. And I was like, bitch, you planned this. Like, how are you as surprised as me right now? This is insane.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've got like fucking actual wire sequences where they're like flying down the street and stuff. And I'm like, I saw no wires. I did not expect them to start fucking flying in the 1921s, the kid. It was ridiculous, mate.
1921's the kid. What do we think the health and safety practices were like in those days?
None. I think everything was built out of asbestos and that child's parents had no fucking clue where he was. I think he was legitimately kidnapped for this film.
But the social commentary, as you put it, you know, the those child catchers, they were a reality. And the whole point of the film is that whole presumption that he's poor and therefore can't look after a kid. Like, the kid is clean. The kid's got a job. The kid's polite. The kid, like, he's a capable parent and he's a loving parent.
How the fuck did you read this film, man? The kid's filthy as shit. The kid's wearing old as fuck clothes. The kid, even in a fantasy, has hot shoes with holes in them. The kid's a criminal running around and smashing windows. That's not a job, Rob. It's called a side hustle from a criminal.
I think you're being very moralist about it, Ben. I think it's a young abandoned baby who would have died in a bin, who's got a loving parent, who's doing their best.
All right. Okay. Being as we're on this right now, can we just take a second to really let it sink in how insane this fucking story is?
Right.
Just the sequence of events are so heartbreaking, back to back to back to back, and it never lets up.
No.
It is just harrowing, 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 harrowing.
Yeah.
Right? Not once was I ever sitting there going, oh my God, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. I was sitting there going, oh, this is so lovely. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. I don't fucking... When did I fall into this lull where Chaplin has made this weird little magic carpet of lies that I'm just fucking riding around like Aladdin?
The big moment of sadness is when the child is taken away from the tramp and is in the back of the car and is distraught and you go,
yeah.
Oh, hang about. It's not... the tramp or the kid that are the problem. It's the society they exist in.
Dude, the saddest part of this film is when the kid is kidnapped by the fucking hotel manager and is reunited with his biological birth mother. I'm like, no! That's horrible. It's Arsene backwards, and it's cinematic magic. It's storytelling magic, the way that's happened. Because it's fucking horrendous stuff told in such a loving way from the perspective of the afflicted. And it's like, oh, things could be worse. What in the fuck are we talking about? Dude, it's incredible. Even in 2024, watching that shit, I was like, my heart broke and melted and broke and melted and broke and melted.
And all done without a single word of dialogue.
No, not one single. Okay, I do think that the soundtrack added to it because it is, and when I say this, I in no way mean this in any other term than it's designed for. It is insane.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fucking jaw-droppingly beautiful music that this whole film is set to.
Yeah.
And the way that the score is planned out, if you were to sit and listen to the music, just the music, headphones on, eyes closed, you could pinpoint where you're at in this movie because of how emotive the score is. And I'm going to tell you, mate, I didn't expect it in the slightest.
Wait. So I've got two weapons. Ready for this?
Fucking hit me with them, man.
So, silent picture, silent movie is kind of a bad term because it's the opposite of the experience, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The film would arrive at the theater, the cinema theater, which was actually a theater that they just pulled a screen onto. There'd be live shows on there, there'd be live plays, there'd be vaudeville, there'd be all this. And then at some point, they just pull down a projector screen and go, well, let's show this. And there's no sound on the reel.
Yeah, yeah.
So what they do instead is they get live musicians to play the sheet music that has been sent with the reel. So when you go to the cinema in the 1920s, you're going to a live gig with a sick light show, right?
Dude, I
it's a I've proper been to one night of these. Out. Right.
I've been to one of these on Halloween the one year in Birmingham Town Hall.
Lovely.
There was a screening of Nosferatu, the original Nosferatu, amazing, with a live organ player and a full orchestra. And I swear to God, mate, like the acoustics in the town hall already, insane.
Yeah.
The placement of the musicians, fucking mesmerizing. And watching Nosferatu done live with the music, genuinely, it was fucking, I felt like I'd gone in a time machine, I'd gone back. I was the youngest in the room by about 40 years.
Yeah.
And it, rightly so, because who the fuck would book this, right? One of the best Halloweens I've ever had in my entire life was watching Nosferatu with a live orchestra and an organ player.
Right.
Incredible. Incredible, fucking incredible.
Right? And how much did it add to the movie and add to the experience? And it's like audio IMAX, right?
Mate, that's exactly what it is. It's IMAX for the ears. It's EarMax. Yeah. It's incredible. it's fucking so good. It is one of these things where I'm like, this works incredible for horror because they can make it scary. I've seen Nosferatu before with, like, you know, the scores done over the top, and it's fine. Like, it's a good film. Like, it's an interesting story. It's very sad. Is it a scary horror? Wouldn't say so.
No.
Watching it live with an organ player who is deafeningly loud, literally fucking, like, caressing the keys with butterfly kisses, and then fucking ham fist punching the high end scares the shit out of me, right?
Yeah.
Deafening.
Take
very
that
scary.
Experience from fear and transmute it into what this film does.
Yeah, comedy. And this is why I've avoided it for my entire life, because I'm like, what am I going to do? All I had in my mind was like Wild Western piano keys being sort of like, dead, dead. Oh no, that was the cantina.
It would fit. But the sadness of this movie with a live orchestra and that soundtrack of this film being played live is what people were going to go see.
I've got one question about this.
Well, before you do,
yeah.
Would it change your mind at all about Mr. Charlie Chaplin and bring you over? I've still got this phrase as if you hate him, but would it change your mind at all about Mr. Charlie Chaplin to know that he wrote the score?
I did not. The whole thing?
He
scored by Charlie Chaplin.
Starred in, right? Directed, produced, edited, and scored the film.
that's inhuman. That's not real, surely. No one helping. It was just him being sort of like, you know what I'm going to do? That, fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He played huge numbers of instruments, like an insane number of instruments, and wrote all of his own film scores.
That's okay.
Well, I can't say all, but as far as I'm aware, I'm sure he outsourced some in his 200 film fucking filmography.
Fuck me.
Because he made about 8 films a fucking minute.
Yeah. Dude, that guy's prolific. If I had have hated him, this film,
yeah,
that would have made me respect him. Maybe not like him, but respect him.
Respect him, yeah.
But because I like him, I don't love him yet, I like him,
yep,
and I respect him a lot,
mm-hmm,
that's tipped me over the edge to a little bit fanboy-y.
Right.
I'm a little bit fanboy of Charlie Chaplin right now because I can't think of another time or another film,
mm-hmm,
where the score fits it as pitch perfect as that does for that. But then maybe it's because Chaplin did the film and the score and was like, I know exactly what my vision has in my mind. And I guess in 1921, no producers are going to go, no, we don't think that would sell. They're going to be like, yes, fucking do it. Exactly. Get it out there. Let's do some shit. Yeah. Come on, buddy.
Bearing in mind as well, like he's gone from short features. He's gone from like single reel pictures. He's gone from live to single reel pictures on shorts for production companies. This is his first feature length, 7 reel. He's done everything himself. Comes out in 1921. It's easy to forget. Film wasn't invented until like 1895.
Fuck me, man.
So we've had the internet longer than Charlie Chaplin had moving pictures.
Oh my God. That's disgusting. That's actually disgusting. I don't know how to feel about that at all. I actually don't know how to feel about that. And what have we done with it? You know what I mean?
What have we done with it? Because Chaplin with this one, we mentioned it when we had a fight earlier. This is the invention of the dramedy, like that Martin McDonagh vibe of like it's hilarious and now it's sad, which makes the funny bits all the funnier, but now it's funny again, which makes the sad bits all the sadder. This is the very first film to do that.
It's fucking insane.
There are no films before that that mix comedy and sadness.
Yeah,
they are one or the other, and he's like, if they're equally both?
I just can't get over that this is 1921 because it's the film's hilarious, mm-hmm, and the film's beautiful and the film is insane and it's the most baffling storytelling that I've ever seen on screen. And I get why, because it's, mm-hmm, 1921. There's no fucking restrictions. It's just complete free reign. Nothing's been done before. Do what the fuck you want.
Yeah.
But also, it brought some shit out of the woodwork, right? Because that's been sitting in it for a while. There's no way that he's just sat down, put pen to paper and gone, oh, this should be a giggle. That's like, there's some fucking depth to it where I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Then we look at, you've just mentioned Martin McDonagh, right? Who is using comedy to deal with horrific situations.
Yeah.
And it's done, obviously there's like audio and dialogue and a lot more tools available now.
He's got a wider palette. He's got more that he can do, for sure.
Yeah. Chaplin did that with fuck all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did it with a few bouncy violins and maybe a cello at some point. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's fucking...
And a camera that he couldn't check anything on until the day after.
Which blows my mind because the framing of this is ridiculous.
The lighting.
Everything's perfect.
Yeah.
Charlie Chaplin also, I'm going to credit as inventing the cutaway scene.
Right, how so?
There's tons of shit, because there's a whole scene in this, right, where it cuts to like a book,
mm-hmm,
next to a very nice like vase of flowers, and it contextualizes the whole moment as if to be sort of like, you know how like South Park or, uh-huh, What We Do in the Shadows or Family Guy's huge for it, right?
Yeah.
They contextualize a joke by showing it in a different scene, like immediately after or just before, right? He did that with this, but he did it in a way that was both dramatic and hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think the first thing that went through my head was, I've seen that flower, I've seen that vase, and I've seen the book set up before.
Mm-hmm.
And the main question that I'm taking away from this film is, where would Midsummer Murders be without Charlie Chaplin's The
right.
Kid?
What an Every important episode. Contribution, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
where would we be? Miss Marple would be fucked. She'd be homeless on the streets of London finding babies in bins.
You're right. There's a lot behind it. I think the upbringing and the childhood that he had, and then working in this massive Hollywood, new money America, LA. He's in California. He's like, it must all have seemed so bizarre. And there's a lot of his first child died 10 days before production began on this film.
Jesus fucking Christ, man.
So there's a lot of that. He didn't write script, so he didn't script this movie. He'd come up with an idea for what would work visually for like a bit. He would film the bit and go,
sure,
right, how does this fit into the plot? And sometimes it wouldn't, so he'd have to reshoot earlier bits of the film to make the new bit that he'd shot flow, which is why there's that weird dream sequence with an angel dog and he's chasing ankles, because he's obviously thought of it, gone, well, that's great, and I've got it, and it cost 50 grand to do, so got to put it in there somehow. And the film needs a bit of a light bit at the end, because we've been serious for a while now.
Did you say that? But there's tons of weird shit in this. Yeah. The bit where the doctor shows up and is just sort of like, "You're not the baby's father. I'm taking him away."
Yep.
Full of comedy.
It's fucking hilarious.
The bit where he's like, "Can you show me the papers, like the birth certificate or whatever he's asking for?" And he just pulls out a fucking giant dusty book, blows the dust in his eyes, and then shows him a note that his biological mother left with an abandoned baby. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Why am I laughing at this? He sits on a chair that breaks under him, and I'm like, this isn't funny.
The bit that got me was when he goes to the flop house, right? Mm-hmm. And it's to rent a bed for the few hours that he needs to sleep. He's got to sneak the kid in. And the guy asks for the admission fee, and he's literally looking in every pocket like 8 times.
For about 5 minutes.
For about 5 minutes. Doing this whole thing, like trying to really long it out while the kid sneaks in. And I'm like, I've been that guy. Trying to get into a nightclub, and they're like, "Have you got ID, mate?" And I know I don't. And I'm just like, oh, it's just in this. Oh, no, it must be in this pocket. And just the whole time he'd been like, just let me in. Just let me in. Just let me in.
I'll
keep looking.
If I hold up the queue long enough.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you. Just get in, man. I can't be fucked with this. Just go. 100%. Just been here 5 minutes. That exact scene, mate, the funniest thing in this film by a long shot is there's a massive sign behind him. That entire scene is partially obscured, so you can't fully read it. But it's just got pickpockets. Written in massive letters behind him. And then when he gets to his bed and he's like, I think he's trying to sort the quilt or something out. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy asleep next to him, and you just see a hand appear and start going like rifling through all of his pockets.
Yeah,
and I was like, what the fuck is this? But the hand that's going through his pockets finds another quarter. And I was like, fuck off. Fuck off. Puts the quarter back in his pocket. He fucking, obviously the kid sneaks in through the window. Mm-hmm. The guy who's looking after the hotel sees the kid, and he uses this fucking quarter that a pickpocket found to pay for the kid. I'm like, that is actually insane. That's actually insane. And I was howling, man.
It's also in its own way quite mature and quite informed social commentary again, because you could, if it weren't for that scene, you could paint it as poor people are great, rich people are cunts. And he's just fully on the side of like the underdog. But what that scene does is goes, everyone's cunts. It's not like the poor are helping each other out. There's no happy spirit down here. We're eating each other.
Welcome to the cesspool of rats.
Right, exactly.
If you're king of the rats, you're okay for a bit. You know what I mean? Until a fucking giant brother of a kid that your kid's just been fighting, who also has massive cauliflower ear, so he's definitely a bare knuckle boxer of some sorts from somewhere, shows up to kick the fuck out of you.
I got one more weapon.
Come on.
I got one more weapon, and then I'm gonna see what you rate this movie.
Okay.
So Jackie Coogan, who plays the kid, right?
Yep.
In question. He grew up to become a not unsuccessful actor. He ended up playing Uncle Fester on the original show of The Addams Family.
Got ya. Like, I knew Fester was in it. I didn't know whether it was the kid or whether it was the kid that the kid fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So no,
the one who looks like a 31-year-old playing a 5-year-old, or a 5-year-old that's had an incredibly rough run.
Very true. He is a weird-looking dude. So that guy, Uncle Fester, the kid, got the law changed, And it's a very important law, and it's a law that's kind of more relevant now than it has been for many, many years. Because child stars used to be a huge thing. He was the first child star. So you've got the first dramedy, the first kind of major international film star in Charlie Chaplin, and the first child star in Jackie Coogan. He earned an estimated $3 to $4 million as a child.
In today's money?
No, in 1921 money.
Oh my God!
Not from this film, just across his career as a child star.
Oh, fucking hell. I was going to say, man. No, Jesus Christ.
The whole film earned $5 million. So he
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was like, how fucking valuable was the child back then? Was he paying the labor house off or what? Like,
he ended up being mad recognizable using like a million and one advertising campaigns.
Right,
Whole bunch of stuff. He became like an American icon. Money was being thrown at him.
So when he was turned, like the American Milky Bar kid?
100% that. He was the template that they based the Milky Bar kid concept on.
Right. Got you.
When he turned 21 in October 1935, he found out that his mum and new stepdad had spent almost all of it in the 18 months that they had been married.
Oh my God.
Yeah. On fur coats, diamonds, jewelry, and expensive cars.
What the fuck, man? I'd struggle to spend that amount of money in a year.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they struggle right through it. And his mother claimed that Jackie enjoyed himself and simply thought he was playing before the camera. No promises were ever made to give Jackie anything and claimed he was a bad boy.
A bad boy that earned me and my new hubby
$111
new fur coats.
Yeah.
Every diamond that Tiffany's ever bought
And I just buy every new Ford car off the production line just to burn it for a laugh.
In front of Uncle Fester's face.
Yeah.
Bad boy. That's it. We're burning the fucking Rolls Royce. Fuck you.
And it's kind of relevant again because obviously TikTok kid influencers, family YouTubers. Shit. Hey guys, just a day in our life.
Oh, don't. It creeps me out.
Tarquin wanted to play on the iPad, but I told him not to. We were going to make a healthy kale salad together.
My nephew has a kid, Louis. He's incredible. He's my great nephew. And they watch these like YouTubers that make content for kids. And I cannot, it just does not sit right with me. I don't know why.
Right. It's uncanny, right?
Yeah, this fully grown adult has decided to start a YouTube channel going, this color's blue! And I'm like, who wakes up in their 30s and says that?
Problem I ended up having with Chester Bennington from Linkin Park. Because album one, I'm like, all right, they're in their early 20s. They're writing songs about being mad at your parents.
Sure.
I get it.
By album five,
I'm like, how are you still relating to 14-year-old girls? What is up there?
Yeah, it's the thing where like you look at Bowling for Soup and be like, why are they playing in my local pub now? Like they were huge when I was 15. And then I remember, they're 50. Like, of course, do you know what I mean?
Fuck you, mom.
Yeah. Fuck you, dad.
I'm
55. I'm so sad. I just gave him the next fucking album title.
You could make the argument that Jonathan Davis, singer of Korn, has probably seen more benefit from his childhood than he has harm at this point.
Yeah, that really was here to stay. You
right.
know what I mean?
He's made 12 albums of profit off that particular trauma.
Yeah.
Imagine if he'd had a happy childhood. He'd be skint.
Or his mum and new stepdad would have spent all of his money that he'd earned from starring in silent movies his entire fucking life on Ford and fur coats.
So at the age of 23, Jackie Coogan had to sue his own mum.
Jesus.
But after legal expenses, he received just $125,000 of the $250,000 left of his $4 million.
What a kick in the dick. Like, you've worked your entire life.
Yeah.
I imagine he was doing school at the same time as doing all of this acting, right?
Nope. 1920.
Fuck.
Again, man, there's no fucking laws.
So his parents were just literally like, fuck school, earn some more money.
Yeah.
Then robbed him.
Yeah.
And then were like, well, here's 100 grand.
Yeah, yeah. So he went completely broke during the court case.
Shocking!
Asked Charlie Chaplin for assistance, who handed him $1,000 on the spot without hesitation. Just went,
okay, well, that makes him seem like lovely.
Right. That's my last weapon. The law got changed, by the way. It's now called Coogan's Law, or the Coogan Act. It was enacted in 1939, and it requires that a child actor's employer set aside 15% of the earnings in a trust called a Coogan account, and specifies when the actor will go to school, what their work hours will be, and their time off. So any kid you see in a film post-1939 are protected by the Coogan Act because of this little lad.
Well, what is... I mean, that's incredible, because we can all see the benefits that it's had on child actors, right? Because there's been no problematic people since then. I mean, let's take Macaulay Culkin, for example. You know what
protected.
I mean? Protected. Safe. Didn't end up in a Sonic Youth video, off his tits on smack. You know what I mean? It was just, he was in a safe environment. And I don't know, Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman was nothing but great. Safe, and now he dresses up in glitter jackets. Now he dresses up in glitter jackets and plays the guitar. That's exactly 100%. What every adult should be doing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Protected. Coogan's Law. Oh, there you go. See? Look at him. Yeah. He's fucking... This is what I'm saying.
Golden, mate. Golden.
Child actors, protected, looked after, safe.
All thanks to Charlie Chaplin.
All thanks to Charlie Chaplin. Let's pat yourself on the back, Hollywood. You fucking nailed it.
And normally, Ben, I've done all my selling on Charlie Chaplin, so this is normally the point where I'd ask.
I'm sold, man.
Yeah, well, I'd normally ask if you want to play a game, but we had a fight earlier, and... I'm still not over it, if I'm honest.
Are you punishing me for having a debate about slapstick?
A debate? You were quite vocal.
Unlike the fucking films that you're so fucking obsessed with.
Yeah, well, joke's on you, mate, because I recorded it, so...
Fuck you.
Already sent to the editor, mate. Already on YouTube.
Amazing.
People hearing this right now, they can hear that. They can hear your naive, idiotic, simplistic take on the kind of cinema that I'm about to ask you to rate. What do you rate Charlie Chaplin's 1921 classic, The Kid, Ben?
This is like 6 B movies wrapped up into one thing. This is like 6 movies that I want to see done. Finding a baby in a bin and then being forced to look after it by the authorities that should be sorting the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the film. Give me that film. You know what I mean? Give me that film. Raising that child to be a fucking criminal and burnt pancake maker whilst wearing a poncho and doing nothing but reading the fucking paper. Yes, definitely do that. Oh, also, you're homeless. The child's homeless. You live in a squat. Give me that movie. Amazing. Yeah. So for that, I think it loses a few points because the pacing's insane. Ooh. The storytelling's insane. It's masterfully done storytelling, but it's very rich.
Yes.
Very dense.
It is.
It's a lot
Christmas
to process.
Cake of films.
It's a fucking Christmas pud. A nice little bit of Christmas pud.
Yeah.
It's
nice and warm, but very rich, and makes you feel a bit sick a couple of days later.
I also don't want to shoot my load too soon. Do you know what I mean?
No,
because this is the first Chaplin
film
that I've watched.
You've got a nasty habit of doing that, I hear.
I mean, subjective, but that's fine.
1 minute in heaven is better than 2 minutes in heaven. I fucked up. What's your rating, Ben?
I'm going to give it a 6. It's good. It's really good. It's a lot better than I expected. But I think if this is his early work, I've got expectations now. I went into this blind with no expectations whatsoever and had a fucking mint time.
Okay.
Next one.
It's above 5.
That's going to be rough. That's going to be a rough one to top, man.
Yeah, it's longer as well. So,
fuck me.
It's above 5, positive. Yeah, of course, man. I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it an 8, 8 and a half. 8.5. I've got a lot of love for it. I've got a lot of love for it. The points it loses are contemporary relevance, right?
Sure.
A lot about this film. If I took one of my sister's college mates and just went watch this, I have to admit they're just going to have a hard time, right?
I disagree, man. I think they'll struggle for the first 5-10 minutes to try and contextualize what it is that they're seeing. But as soon as it clicks, it fucking clicks.
All right, fuck it. 9. There's just,
Jesus
bits.
Christ,
there's just
Rob.
Bits. There's just, yeah.
This is a trilogy that you're bringing to the table, right?
Yeah.
Does it get better than this? If it gets better than this, it
gets, better
it gets
for me,
exactly
you're gonna
one
hate
better.
You're going to hate it.
Min. Fucking hell. All right.
Just time for comment corner?
Yes, let's do it. We have had... 6 or 7 people. I haven't got the individuals of who, because to be honest with you, this week's been very busy, and I feel like
I've been a fair few people. We had Rosie on Discord, Ross Grant, who makes all of our memes. We've had
there
Lady
we go.
Vader, We've had a fair few people. You've really hit a nerve here by saying that when you get the flu, you get weird dreams.
Out of proportion dreams. Stuff seems bigger or smaller than it should do, and that's how I know I'm getting ill. Turns out I'm not the only one. I fucking told you. You're welcome.
So when you get the flu,
yeah,
in your dreams, do you have a decent cock and a nice chin?
No, I have a great chin. I just have a great chin. I'm not asked about anything else. It's the chin that bothers me. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I have.
If we ever make it big, is that your prosthetic surgery? If we ever make it big,
immediately the second paycheck we get from the podcast is straight to the chin. First one, I'll give to my family and be sort of like, there you go. There's a nice little gesture. Second one, chin plant.
Stan Smith quagmire.
I'm gonna cast a shadow when I walk into a room, and then I'm gonna walk into the room. Do you know what I mean?
Us turning up at events is going to be the opening scene of Star Wars. It's going to be me walking in as the little rebel cruiser.
Yeah.
And then just 45 seconds of your chin.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. Like exactly what it's going to be.
Well, I mean, this was illuminating, mate. This was illuminating.
Unfortunately, guys, that is all the time we've got this week. We love and appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so fucking much for listening, hanging out with us. Make sure you go check out the YouTube Extra. It's live now. It's me and Rob fighting, apparently. Yeah. I genuinely was looking forward to playing a game, but that's fine. It's fine.
There's time for games, Ben. There's time for games. You being a silly lad, saying that you don't like slapstick. When you don't even have a good definition of slapstick, you're just like, people hitting people with ladders. That's not...
Yeah, that's exactly. Ladders is another one. I didn't even mention ladders. You're giving me the ammunition. It's shit. Sorry. Spoiler for the YouTube video.
It's a little bit like me going, oh, do you like the band Tool? And you're like, no, man, I fucking hate jazz. Jazz is so shit. What a load of wank jazz is.
Nothing like that at all. It's like me going,
exactly
no,
what you just did.
I find it pretentious, prog rocky wankers. And then I'm like, I listen to it and I'm like, oh, that's it. Yeah, see?
We do love and appreciate each and every one of you. I'm just going to cosplay a society and tell you to do what society always tells you to do, which is just buy shit and try and spend your way into feeling better. While Ben is going to wrap up the thoughts and themes of this movie to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week, by giving you a nice little motivational speech, a little thought, a little Jerry Springer thought of the day.
Yeah, I've got this. You got it?
Okay, I'm just going to say, consume.
The one, I'm not going to say the main lesson. I'm going to say a lesson that we can take from this film is that it can always be worse. And even if it is bad right now, you can make the best of your situation. You can still find those little nuggets of joy. But I think the main takeaway from Charlie Chaplin's The Kid is crime pays. And everything turns out fine. So I guess just break windows, shyster people, and it all works out. It's fine.